So just a quick announcement. If you want to get the most practical strategies, tools, and tips on team culture, be sure to follow at TOC Culture on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. We've recently restarted our Culture Builder podcast series as a video cast where nearly every day we are sharing 1 to 2 minute shorts for coaches, athletes, and sports parents. So follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at TOC Culture so you don't miss out on the Culture Builders, the practical strategies, tools, and tips to build a great team culture. High performance. This is a word being used more and more to describe the type of athlete or a sporting culture where people are committed to being the very best they can be. When I think of what a high performance athlete looks like to me, I think of some of the athletes I've been fortunate to spend time around at the professional and international levels of sports, and even a few collegiate Division I athletes. They don't just show up when they're expected to show up. They show up early, or maybe they stay late. They watch film. They do mental training. They're disciplined with their nutrition and sleep. And more we're seeing that they even make time for the important relationships in their life and downtime to recover. These are critical to performance. These athletes, though, they are always looking for that edge, those 1% improvements, and they're looking for those in almost everything they do in life. Now, whether we've coached, worked with, or just watched some show on Netflix about these high-performance athletes, we all have a sense of what it looks like. But what does high-performance as a leader look like? The high-performing general manager, athletic director, or head coach, how do they operate? Well, I'd argue many coaches have the wrong perception of what high performance looks like. They think it's late nights of film, sleeping in the office, forgetting to eat, or even just eating poorly because you're so busy grinding and preparing for the next game. They think it's sacrificing exercise, time with family, and not having the time to work on themselves, doing things like reading or mental training. They're making all these sacrifices for the team so they can win. Well, this is what many might think is high performance in coaching. I would disagree. The high performance leader, in my opinion, they take care of themselves. They work on themselves. They're always working to bring the very best version of themselves to the team, the program, the organization, and even their families. They are committed to their long-term growth, not just short-term success. Now, in part two of our conversation with the leadership coach, Brian Levinson, this is what we're going to be discussing. What does high-performance leadership look like from Brian's perspective? If you haven't already, be sure to go back and listen to part one of our conversation with Brian. Brian's an executive leadership coach and a former mental skills coach. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurban, and I'm usually joined by my friends and co-hosts Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick, though they sat this interview out. In addition to this podcast, I'm the founder of TOC, which supports leaders and their teams to building extraordinary cultures through one-on-one coaching, consulting, online training, and speaking. To learn more about TOC and my work, I recommend starting with these 3 steps. First, subscribe to the TOC newsletter. There's so much value in that every week. Second, read my book, The Culture System. And third, get trained through our transformational coaching and culture certification program. You can do all these things and learn more about TOC at tocculture.com. Now, for the second part of our conversation with Brian Levinson. So I want to take a step back here, and there's a few things that you've mentioned, you know, even just, you know, around the curiosity of Brad Stevens and the curiosity of Coach Cal. But there's even something earlier you said that I think was really important. You talked about high performance leaders that you work with that are intentional about building their culture. And that word intentional is really, really important to me. I think for me, that's really closing the gap between our philosophy and all those types of things and actually what we end up do, how we lead, right, in so many ways. But I ask you this, you know, what's, when you think about that word intentional, what does that mean to you in the context of leadership?
I wouldn't say it was like this big word for me until I was away with my wife. We were actually in Greece and was looking out at the Mediterranean. And at the time I was about 30 episodes into my podcast and it was called Beyond the Surface. And I was just reflecting on the podcast. It was just starting to like take off and it was fun and I was enjoying it. This was probably 7 years ago. And then, you know, sometimes when you're looking out at nature and you're still and you're quiet, things come to you. And I looked at my wife and I go, I kind of think the podcast is not about going beyond the surface with people. It's really been about how they are intentional about how they show up. And it was the thread that I found connected all of the guests I had had up until that point, who were, I had agents, I had media personalities, I had coaches, I had athletes, I had actors, I had business leaders. And the thread that I was noticing is that they were intentional, whether that was spray painting something on their wall or using their self-talk before they went to perform or writing a note to themselves and putting it in their wallet. They were intentional with how they wanted to show up from a mindset standpoint. And I think there is a commonality there that exists for leaders in that they are intentional and thoughtful about how they want to show up and behave, and they care about it. And they care about their reputation to a certain extent because it involves an intentional process. So that word for me is about action. It's about behavior. It's about mindfulness. And it's about a concept and a construct that I'm going to drive my environment rather than have my environment just drive me. And that, you know, I'm going to have it instead of it having me. And I think that's a big piece for me and certainly for the people that I coach is how do they intentionally want to show up?
Mm. And let's unpack that a little bit more. You said it's about action, behavior, mindfulness. Tell us a little bit more about that.
The mindfulness piece is just the idea of it being thoughtful. It's something that we are observant of, that we are staying with, that we are present to. And then just the behavior and to me, it's action. So it's one thing to be intentional in your mind. It's a whole nother thing to show up. And I think a big part of leadership is showing up, having conviction, making the mistake, owning the mistake, learning from the mistake, and then figuring out another way to do something. And so leadership to me involves great curiosity in that I'm going to listen, I'm going to ask questions, but we can't just end it there. Like if you're leading, you have to actually take action and you have to be willing to be vulnerable and put yourself out there. And then when things don't go right, you have to raise your hand and say, my bad. And I think a lot of times people in our space focus on the curiosity piece and don't actually emphasize also the conviction piece. And if you're only curious and you're never convicted, I would argue you're not leading. Leadership requires you to take a stand. It requires you to do something that might not be likable or favorable and that might have consequences. And then if it doesn't go well, that's where the humility comes in to be able to say, what did I do? How could I have done it differently? Who the heck am I to make that decision? Who was on the team? How did I come to it? Those are just such pieces to the learning process and the high performance process.
One of my things that I want to pick your brain on is something you talked about in your book, you know, Shift Your Mind, which really emphasizes, you know, different polarities that I'll let you kind of give a brief explanation around. But one of the polarities that's, I think it was one of your earlier chapters, is around humble and arrogant. And this is one that I loved. I've actually done a lot with this with some of the leaders that I've worked with and even some of the teams, just this humility and arrogance, and how oftentimes humility is the one that's like looked well upon in sports and leadership, and arrogance is something that's looked very down upon. But I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about, you know, real quick, what is the polarity? You can give listeners an overview of that. Secondly, why arrogance is actually potentially a good thing and how you see this show up for leaders.
First on polarity, I was writing this book before I knew what polarities were. And so I met with somebody who actually was in our sort of Georgetown alumni group. I was curious about the program at the time. And I was like, yeah, I've got this book I've been working on. He's like, have you heard of polarities? And I go, nope. And so I started doing a deep dive into polarities, which to me are basically the idea that we tend to think of things as good or bad, and we tend not to see the nuance that exists in everything. And so rather than seeing something as good or bad, you can see, all right, there are probably positives that exist with said thing. And then there are positives to the opposite of that. And then there are downsides to each as well. So the idea of using and instead of or, and so let's just use humble and arrogant as an example. Instead of saying we have to be humble or arrogant, it's saying, how do we be humble and arrogant? And how do we take the benefits of each while also making sure that we're minimizing the downsides of each? And so that concept of blending is something I'd been doing with my clients. And I'd noticed with the athletes I'd worked with that they did this. So the book is all about these athletes basically coming to me with these polarities and then me realizing, whoa, these exist way beyond my clientele. I'd watch a Chris Rock special and Chris Rock would basically be talking about how he prepares and then how he performs. And then I'd watch a special on Kobe Bryant and Kobe would be sharing how he prepares and how he performs. And then I'd hear Beyonce share her mindset for preparation and performance. And they wouldn't necessarily say, my mindset for preparation is this, my mindset for performance is that. But underneath it, if you were actually listening for it, once you saw it, you couldn't unsee it. And when I say you, I'll just speak for myself. I couldn't unsee it. I became obsessed with this stuff. And the humble and arrogant one is the first shift that we talk about. So there's 9 of them that we focus on in the book. There were another 30 that got cut off the chopping block that we thought it would just be too much for readers. So we focused on these 9. These were the most powerful from a research standpoint and also from an anecdotal evidence standpoint. And honestly, 4 years later, the arrogant one, I still am torn on. Like, people ask me all the time, like, what would you have done differently if you were writing it today? I, like you said, humble is something that's widely accepted as generally good. Although I think humble in performance can really get in the way for people. And I would tell you my clients that were humble in performance, it was their number one Achilles. It was the number one thing that they struggled with, is they brought their humility into a performance and it hurt them drastically. But that word arrogant, it triggers people because they've had an arrogant boss or they had an arrogant parent or they had an arrogant friend or spouse that burned them. And I really try to make it clear in the book that I'm not saying be arrogant all the time. I'm simply saying be humble in preparation and then shift into being arrogant in performance. But I think some people see that word and they just run for the hills. Now, I still am convicted and believe that it's the right word. But could I have said be curious in preparation and convicted in performance? Then maybe it would have still gotten the message across in a better way. That's the humble side of me that I wonder about. But for me, yeah, like arrogance, if you study a lot of the elite performers, they have this unshakable belief in themselves and their identity that they're not going to get burned or tarnished because they fail and they're willing to go for it. And after the performance, they'll go back into that humble state. But when they're in between the lines or they're quote unquote in the arena, they know that they don't have a choice in the matter. And that if they don't believe in themselves, no one else will. So that's what I found as I did all the research. You know, we could have gone with confident, but I think you have to be highly confident to actually be humble. So I think humility requires amazing confidence. And we really did want to have these polarities so that people could see that there's actually value in arrogance. Just depends on the environment. There's actually value in humility. It just depends on the environment. But if you're the wrong way in the wrong environment, it can be really toxic for us and the people that were around.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely probably leaned more towards the word conviction, but totally get what you're saying there around why you chose that word arrogance. I think when it comes to leadership, there's an element of it's not, okay, it's game time now, right? Like, you know, for executives as well as even coaches, right? You know, coaches are out recruiting, they're running team meetings, they're doing one-on-ones. It's not all, I mean, leading as a coach is not all about game time. And so you honestly have to hold and navigate both these polarities of humility and arrogance or conviction, we'll say, if that better suits the listener here. But that's a difficult thing to navigate in leadership, right? Because it's not like, okay, well, it's game time. Now I can go put my, you know, confident hat on. And not that or arrogant hat on. Like, not to say that a guy like Steph Curry, I think, still is able to play with humility as well as arrogance at the same time. But
is he though? Can we actually go there? Because
yeah.
I watch Steph and I don't see him humble on the court. I don't. Like, I mean, he got humbled. We're recording this right after they got drubbed by the Boston Celtics. But I think what's made Steph so spectacular is that he is maybe the most humble superstar we've ever seen off the floor. Like, maybe Tim Duncan, but I'm not sure there's ever been an NBA superstar that's low maintenance as Steph, seemingly from the outside looking in. And so there's this humility that he has to get better, to grow, to improve his story, right? Virginia Tech offers him a walk-on instead of a scholarship, even though his dad's a legend there. I mean, Davidson's the only place that would take him. Like, there's a whole story here of his humility driving him. He completely transforms his body. He's now jacked. I mean, he's 6'3", and he is a specimen, right? And he is an athletic freak. The guy's a scratch golfer. I mean, like, people think of athleticism in a very minute way of just, like, jumping and dunking. Like, Steph is a freak. But he transforms when he gets on the floor. He's got that mouth guard going. He's shooting from half court when no one used to do this stuff. Like, he has this unshakable belief, even when they're getting drubbed by the Celtics. And so I think sometimes we don't give ourselves the freedom to step into different versions of ourselves out of fear of being judged by society as being bad, and we don't always go for it, and we hold ourselves back. I think Steph is so inspiring to so many people because he is genuinely humble when he steps off the floor. And then when he gets on the floor, Steve Kerr has literally described him as arrogant. That is the word. He says he has this inner arrogance inside him. And I think sometimes we're afraid to say that because we know if we show up as arrogant and we fail, society's going to laugh at us. They're going to call us evil. They're going to look at us and judge us. And it's scary. And so I just think he's such a good example. Now I get my conviction back up for arrogance because I just think he is. He is a wonderful example of what my book was all about.
Well, few have prepared as well as he has and earned that right to be that level of arrogance, as well as I would say he's still able to navigate it on the floor. He has an arrogance around his play, but he's still coachable and he's still a great teammate, you know, and it's not, while he has this arrogance, it's not all about himself, even when he's playing. And so I think he's able to show us you have to navigate that to be an effective leader on the court. You have to have some bit of humility. And I guess that's where my curiosity for you is, like, when you're working with leaders on, let's say, this polarity, not even all polarities, but even when you can focus on this one, how do you help leaders in sports and in business navigate the humble, arrogant polarity?
Before I get to the leader, just to close the loop on performers, because I do think leaders are complicated to answer that question. I agree with you. These aren't in a silo. So I have 9 of these. So another one is selfish and selfless. And I think Steph is selfless, even though he's shooting from wherever he's shooting from. He's a selfless player. I talk about being future focused in preparation and being present in performance. Those are other polarities that if you put them together with humble and arrogant, you get something really special. Fear and fearless, perfectionistic and adaptable, uncomfortable and comfortable, experimenting and trusting the process, right? Analyzing and instinct. Like, these are all the different ones that I talk about in my book. And if you blend them all together and take maybe 3 of them, you get something like really beautiful that can come out from even like the polarity to the other polarity. So now you're working with 2 and 2 and 2 and 2 and 2 and 2. For leaders, once again, I would go back to that idea that in my experience, you have, let's just use business. You have a salesperson. They're similar to an athlete. Their job is to go execute, put their head down, do their job. Then you have a sales manager. A sales manager is closer to a coach, right? Sales manager is trying to get the most out of their team, win the day, win the game, win the moment, whatever you want to call it. That's similar. And by the way, we've all seen salesperson, not necessarily a great sales manager. Star athlete, not necessarily a great coach. And then when you go above those rings, now you get to the C-suite in business that's thinking about the entire enterprise. And sometimes for the enterprise's sake, we might let go of a high performer, even if they're negatively impacting our culture. A general manager might step in and say, I know you like this player because he can help you win, but he's actually hindering us in growing and creating the type of championship culture we want. So I think you have to look at the different levels to which with which they operate. And then for each of those, there are polarities that they need. I'll go back to that curious and conviction one. I think that's a really big one for a leader, is to listen to everybody in the room, get opinions, get feedback. And then when it's time to make a decision, I'm going to be convicted. That's the direction we're going in. Not everyone's going to agree. And if I'm wrong, I will raise my hand and say that I'm the one that got it wrong. And that to me is where general managers have to be really good. You know, we praise the Jerry Wests of the world as general managers. We praise John Lynch in San Francisco with the 49ers. But if you look, they make awful draft picks. Like, they screw up decisions all the time. And we glamorize and glorify people, and we don't always look at their blemishes. And we're all going to have blemishes. So if you're a leader, you better own the blemish. And more importantly, you better learn from the blemish. And then hopefully you won't make the same mistake again. And if you do, then once again, you need to take ownership. So ownership is such a big piece of being a leader, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you just pointed out where I think leaders, especially in sports, struggle the most is curiosity to take all these different perspectives, hold those perspectives, show respect, right? Make people feel like they were heard and had a voice. But then make the move to conviction, but then come back to humility or curiosity in the sense of like, okay, what did I do to screw up there? Or what could I have done better? And I think it's just this constant moving in and out of those, leaning into those kind of spaces that really high performing leaders are able to do.
And I love how you just put high performing with leaders, and that there's the intersection that I would probably go toward, because I think that same process is essential for an athlete. Highly curious, learn. Then it's time for game day. I'm going to be convicted. It's not a decision, but it's a time bound performance. Then after the game, I need to go back and be curious and humble and do that process again. So there's probably the intersection where there are similarities between a high performer athlete and a CEO leader.
So when we think about these high performing leaders, I've got a couple questions to get you out the door here, but this one I'm going to ask, and I know we're always inundated with the latest influencers, you know, routines and rituals and all the things that people do. But I mean, you've interviewed so many people, you've worked with some great leaders. What are some of the common disciplines or practices that really high performing leaders share that every coach should at least consider incorporated into their life?
I don't know. I can give you an answer, and I'm not sure I'm convicted on it. I think it's more like an introspection on what we were talking about earlier. Who am I and how do I want to show up and how can I get better? And I think that's maybe the last piece is the people I work with, the people I interview, they are obsessed with getting better and they want to improve. And they create mechanisms to do that, whether it's going back to school or going to conferences or talking to people outside of their industry. I think they do spend a lot of time there. But look, I've had people on my podcast that have tried to neatly define like what it takes to be successful. But to me, success is so individual. And so like, what is high performance? I think it depends on how you're measuring it. And certainly we can see high performers in sports, for example, based on wins and losses. But like, I don't know, if I continue to have wins in my business, but I get divorced, like for me, that's not going to be success. So my point is basically to say that we all need to get clear on how we define success. And too often we don't spend enough time playing in that sandbox. So if I were to answer your question in a neat and clean way, I would say the best people I've interviewed are really intentional with how they define success.
Mm. And then from there, you feel like the habits, the daily habits are all very wide ranging.
I do. I've worked with people that wake up early and meditate or journal or exercise. And then I work with people who don't. And I think for me, there were times in my life where I was like, okay, I need to meditate for 20 minutes twice a day. I need to exercise for an hour. I need to wake up at 5:30. I need to eat vegan. I need to not drink alcohol. I need to read for an hour. I need to write and journal. Like, we have all of these quote unquote hacks for life. And I find that the people that I work with, they have some intention with how they're operating, but they're different. And so I'm hesitant to prescribe like quote unquote hacks, because I think once again, different strokes for different folks. And are you trying to optimize or are you trying to live a life well lived? And I don't always think those are the same. There are plenty of people who are optimizing professionally, but are doing so in a meaningless way. There are people that are not trying to optimize professionally, but are really great fathers or mothers or grandparents. So I think too often we want to say, this is what success is and here's the path. And I had someone on my podcast recently, we talked about, is it more mindset or more habits? And they make the argument that it's more mindset. And yet we're obsessed with habits. I mean, the books that have gotten over 1 million books sold on habits, like I've had on Charles Duhigg on my podcast, The Power of Habit, wonderful book, wonderful book. Atomic Habits, I have not had James Clear on, but wonderful books, right? But I think maybe we're following or going after the habits when we're not spending enough time with the mindset. And that is something I'm thinking about right now. I'm not sure about, but it's something I'm pondering. And if I think about the mindsets of the people, that's where I find more similarities. And that's what I ended up writing my book about as well.
I want to ask you, what are the habits that help you to shift your mindset? But I'm going to refrain from asking that. And just, you know, when you think about the important things that people do to help maintain that mindset, is there any common themes there?
Look, I think they're learners, right? Like, and that, whether they read or they watch TED Talks or they listen to this podcast, they do love to learn. And so that piece, I think, is the openness to learning is a common theme thread. People don't work with me if they're not interested in learning. So I'm getting a unique like sample size. You don't sign up for coaching unless you want to learn. And then I would argue, even with my podcast, like the people that come on my podcast tend to be people interested in learning and also sharing. But I think that would be the thing that I noticed. They're highly curious. They want to learn. They want to get better. They're ambitious. They're driven. They're open-minded. Like those are the themes that I notice. And also those are the clients that I seek out. Like I want to work with people that are like that. And I guess for myself, I aspire to bring those qualities into my work as well. And the more that I do those things, the better things tend to work out for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get you out of here on this. When you think about your work as a executive leadership coach, what's the biggest, most important mindset shift that you've experienced?
You know, before we started talking, we've talked a lot about curiosity. So I think people have gotten their curiosity fix. Like if I were to write another book, it might be all about curiosity, but I'll tell you something else that's really come out of my podcast. And we were talking about it before we started recording, which is collaboration. And I struggle to collaborate. I like being in control. I like making sure that I have autonomy to do things the way that I want. But I have collaborated with people to make my podcast better. I have collaborated with people to make my coaching practice better. I have collaborated with people to make sure my facilitation when I am in front of a organization is better. I've co-facilitated a bunch of stuff with people. So I think that's a growth edge for me that I'm still undertaking, which is how do I continue to collaborate? I think I've been able to get to where I am in collaboration. There are people that give me opportunities, whether it's a client or a coach, like that I'm genuinely grateful for. And I collaborate with them. But I think even beyond that, like going outside myself is sort of another stage for me and learning how to maybe let go of control a little bit and not have it be threatening my autonomy is a big, big piece of the puzzle for me. So it's still a work in progress. I would say the biggest change I've made is to try to lean into curiosity. And the change I'm trying to make is to be a little more collaborative, just because when I study people, they are often highly collaborative that are doing really cool stuff that's making an impact on the world. And I think it's hard to do so by yourself.
Well, man, I'm excited to be collaborating and partnering with you on some things here in the future. So thanks for coming to the podcast and thanks for the friendship.
Thanks, JP. I appreciate you.
All right. That's a wrap of our conversation with Brian. If you know me, I was super excited, but not really surprised when Brian brought up that word intentional. Intentionality is the number one missing ingredient to great leadership. As I wrote about in The Culture System, I really appreciated Brian discussing as well this polarity of humility and arrogance or conviction. We just scratched the surface in this conversation, so there's much more for us to explore. So Nate, Betsy, and I are actually recording an episode around that topic, which we'll be sharing with you in the next few weeks. So be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already and keep listening. In all my conversation with Brian, though, I think the thing that has stuck with me the most is this. Do not get caught up in the leadership hacks or habits. Focus on the mindset. He's had me really reflecting on my last 10 years, particularly my own growth as a leader, as a person. And I was been asking, what is it, mostly my habits, or has it been my mindset that's led to my growth? Now, I'm not sure if it's a chicken or an egg question, but I think Brian is right. We would all do well to reflect on the question he posed for us, which is, are we trying to optimize through habits, or are we trying to live a life well, right? So are we trying to optimize, or are we focused on living a life well lived? I far, far too often am caught up in the optimization. I'm looking for those hacks, those habits. And yet when I think of all the high performance leaders that I know and in sports, the ones that I admire the most, it's the ones who live life well that I respect the most. Sure, they have great habits, but I think that flows from their mindsets of gratitude, abundance, and a commitment to the long-term growth and bettering themselves. You can follow Brian and his website, strongskills.co. He's on X at Brian Levinson. Also, he's got a fantastic podcast, The Intentional Performers. Don't forget to pick up a copy of his book, Shift Your Mind. It's really, really practical on the mental side. A great read for athletes, not just coaches. Lastly, thanks for listening, and be sure to follow us at TOC Culture on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Also at Amazon and Audible and Apple Books, you can pick up copies of The Culture System and The Sports Parent Solution. Also, go to our website, tocculture.com, to learn more about one-on-one coaching or to start your transformational coach and culture certification.